Welcome to Fuller Butts, a behind-the-scenes plastic surgery podcast. Yes, you heard that right. Join your co-hosts, Dr. Sam Fuller and Dr. Dan Butts, board-certified plastic and reconstructive surgeons on an exclusive full-access pass into the world of plastic surgery. Combining their expertise and training, Drs. Fuller and Butts will share medical insights, detailed explanations, and lighthearted humor to keep you entertained and informed. We're certain you'll become passionate about the plastic surgery specialty, and between debunking myths, uncovering truths, or just making you laugh out loud at their perspective on this creative and artistic field, we've got something for everyone. From tummy tucks to Botox and mommy makeovers to surgery do-overs, the Fuller Butts podcast will surely satisfy your podcast fix. All right, now let's dive into this episode.
Welcome back to Fuller Butts, behind the scenes plastic surgery podcast. I'm Dr. Daniel Butts, and this is Dr. Fuller, your co-host. Today, we're going to be talking about a recent Megan Fox interview, just kind of delving into the world of plastic surgery, celebrities, and a lot of how there's a lot of questions about what people may have had done, what may have not, and you know, the importance of being transparent and open about it, because so often they are obviously celebrities, they're put on a pedestal and people are looking up to them, trying to achieve, you know, some sort of status. And if it's thought to be natural, it's obviously a little bit different situation. What do you think, Sam?
I would like to know, do you know what year Transformers came out?
It was a great movie.
It was phenomenal.
That movie came to my mind, obviously.
How old do you think you were?
Was it 2004?
2007. That's pretty good. So I was like 24 years old. It left an impression on me. I liked Transformers growing up. Megan Fox was, I thought, did a phenomenal job in the movie. And do you know what the name of her love interest was in the movie?
No.
It was Sam.
I don't remember that. Oh, that's because that.
So starting to connect the dots here, aren't we?
I really thought that was an epiphany for you.
Yeah, that's where I was like, oh, wow, that's really great. I should see this movie again. No, but I think it's very clear and obvious that we should go on the record saying that we are not her surgeons. We don't.
I think it's pretty clear that she did not come to the Midwest for her plastic surgery 20 years ago.
It may surprise some of our rabid fans, but no, we are not the plastic surgeons for Megan Fox. Although if she's interested, we surely would
be
happy to help out. But I encourage everyone to go and at least read an article just on the review, because I think it's a wonderful and open review of plastic surgery, social media, expectations of appearances. And it's great because someone who's, you know, quote unquote, a sex symbol was able to be very clear about her plastic surgeries that she had and plastic procedures that she had not done. And she's now 37 with three kids, looking phenomenal. And we can no longer guess and project what she had done. And we can become familiar that, yeah, it's very common actually to have plastic surgery and still look natural and great. And it doesn't have to be six or seven procedures in, and it's not like things are botched, but it's important to at least get some of the facts set straight. So I thought we'd go from the top down. Dan, there were, I guess, were a lot of theories that she has had facelifts, brow lifts, thread lifts, and she said absolutely not. She's had nothing done on her face other than tucks, fillers, and one rhinoplasty.
Yeah, which I think, you know, is not all that surprising. I mean, she's obviously a celebrity. She has some good genes basis, and she's only 37. So having a facelift, a brow lift, a lot of those things, I think, you know, maybe people were speculating about it. People like to speculate about anything. But good Botox, good skincare, you know, taking care of herself, fillers can really, you know, help maintain, you know, nice facial proportions in a natural fashion, keeping the skin, you know, preventing wrinkles in a lot of ways. And having one rhinoplasty when you're younger, I mean, those tend, if it goes well, which most of them do, if you go to a good surgeon, they tend to be very well, long lasting, and they can often change a little bit in those first few years. which is maybe why people thought they, she had revisions. But I think that it's, again, good to be transparent and honest about that. And
I think if you're looking at a nose that is had 6, 7, 8 revisions into it, you are getting into that Michael Jackson category where things are looking off and bad. You should not be going into the nose that many times. And clearly that's not the case for her. So one rhinoplasty, filler and tox is super common. If you are a 37-year-old mother and you have glistening, tight skin that's radiant, you are obviously doing something more than that. And I think her lips are very full. Like, you can see that there's filler there, and that's just the look that she's going for, which works, I think, very well. And go ahead.
Did she mention anything about lasers, light treatments? I can't remember
that. I don't think it went into that much detail, but, as we tell our patients, something that we were trained on is really just treatment stacking. It's not just going to be only filler, only tox. And it's certainly frustrating when we hear from celebrities or people in the media saying, oh, all I've done is put some olive oil on my face and that's it. Or, oh, I just do yoga and that's what allows me to look so radiant. And it's just very...
Have you seen those ads for Pilates and how they lift and fill your breast? Someone showed me that the other day. I was like, wow, that's incredible.
Yeah, it's off-putting, and it is a combination. So just as you said, quality skincare, laser treatments, different peels, there's,
and prevention. I mean, avoiding the sun, sunscreen. I mean, a lot of patients aren't so good about that in their early or late teens, 20s, and then kind of start catching on to preventative things as well.
Absolutely. And she started off, I think, with a beautiful foundation and then was just able to accent it with plastic surgery. And I think, very nicely done plastic surgery and able to age appropriately. She goes on to say that she's had 3 breast augmentations or breast procedures. First one when she was 21 or 22, and then she had them revised after breastfeeding. And she has 3 kids is what she said. And then she had 1 revision after that because they didn't look as good or be as perfect as she wanted them. And I think that's also important for us to talk about.
Yeah. So, I mean, young patients, early 20s, having breast augmentation, I think it's really important to expect your breast to change a lot, right? With breastfeeding and just age and time. So she obviously wanted more enhanced breasts. She was able to achieve that nicely. And it probably lasted her, 15 years. But then we have breastfeeding, pregnancies take a toll on the breast, and that's where revisions are often much more common, probably again because of the changes, not the problematic implant.
So, a common question that I get for my younger patients is, should I wait until after I breastfeed or until after I have kids to have a breast augmentation? What do you tell those patients?
I tell them it kind of depends on when they're planning on having children. If it's like in the next year or so, then probably wait. But if it's 5 to 10 years, well, if you want to achieve that result now for your self-esteem, confidence, then you should, there's no real reason to not take advantage of the benefits that you can have for the next 5 to 10 years.
Yeah. I just had an Instagram story that said, life's short, get the boobs. And, that's kind of my motto. You never know when that's going to happen. If you're going to have kids, when that's going to be. And if you go your entire 20s with having a body that you don't feel 100% confident and wonderful in, then, you'd hate to have that FOMO or that regret decade later saying, oh gosh, I should have done that. And I have plenty of patients who have gone through the process of breast augmentation pregnancy, and it's not that bad. It's not like, not a guarantee that their body is going to be destroyed or absolutely needing surgery. Sometimes they rebound and perk up and recover quite naturally. And so I don't think that that's a gimme. I let patients know that it can change. They can still breastfeed even if they have the breast augmentation. Everything's safe, and just have to have an educated decision for that.
Exactly. I think I hear more often when patients come in, and this is a lot of times for tummy tucks where they've waited until they're 55, 60, and they finally go through it. They're like, why did I wait so long? This is incredible. I think we do a lot of breast augmentations after pregnancy breastfeeding because patients lose so much breast volume. So there's also a lot of patients saying, I never thought I'd have this done, but now I have no breast anymore after breastfeeding. So they're trying to, you know, restore some of that.
Yeah, they just want to get their body back, their confidence, their self-care. And oftentimes that's a slippery slope, because as you have kids, your responsibilities and your duties are for them. And then it's really hard to find time 6 weeks to yourself, as scary as that sounds. And so there's never really going to be a perfect time to get it done.
6 weeks.
Not bad. I mean, well, if you're doing a full mommy makeover with tummy tuck and, you know, all of that other stuff, it's, you know, you can't pick up a child, like a 2-year-old, 10-pound weight restriction for 6 weeks.
No. You know, your patients don't pick up their kids for 6 weeks.
I don't want them to. If they're seated, they can sit on them and that sort of thing. But as far as, you know, strict restrictions, that's the go-to. I've had patients do more than you have to in life, but I'm not telling them, oh yeah, you're going to be able to do sit-ups and work out and lift out whatever you want in 2 to 3 weeks. Is that what you tell your patients?
Well, no. But I don't say, I mean, normally it's 10 pounds for 2 weeks and like kind of slowly increasing it as like it feels comfortable. So I often just encourage them to do things a little bit slower, you know, be extra careful. You know, I'm always like, yeah, I remember when my kids were 2 and 3 and they throw tantrums, they're a little harder to control. So maybe don't try to control a tantrum, but you know, if they're calm and you can, you know, do it in a controlled fashion, it should be fine.
I tell my patients it's 5 pounds for a week and then it's 10 pounds for 5 more weeks. At 6 weeks, they can do whatever they want. And I know that life happens and it's very, or next to impossible.
Keep them in that bubble.
To keep them in that bubble. But those are my guidelines. So I just want them to kind of visualize me on their shoulder. And if they're like, oh, I wonder if I should do this, like look down and say, I should probably not. And just, you know, be smart with it. So right. Back to Megan Fox, right?
Yeah. Yes. Back to Megan Fox. Yeah. In her third revision, I think she mentions that she had some rippling, which, you know, she's quite thin, lean. There's not, you know, I often talk about how much tissue you have to camouflage the implant, and that really can dictate, you know, how natural something looks. If you're thinner or less breast volume, you know, it's often harder to, you know, make them look natural.
So do you think they switched the pocket from subglandular to subpec?
Yeah, I mean, that's too much to speculate. She didn't like give a lot of details about that. I mean, maybe she went up to a more cohesive implant. I would imagine she was already submuscular given she had them done 20 years ago, and that was, you know, subglandular was not really all that popular then.
Like 16 years ago. She's 37.
Okay. 16 years ago, 20 years ago.
She
2 weeks.
We also were quoted as saying that she wanted the largest implants possible put in her on her last visit, on her last surgery. Did you see that quote?
No.
So she wanted the largest implant that would
fit in her body.
Which I would.
Oh, that would fit in her body.
Yeah.
I don't think she has 800s.
No, I mean, within the frame of her body. But that was her goal. That was her expectation. I don't have patients in my practice who are coming in saying that. Or if they are, I'm talking them down to something that's appropriate for their base width and for their size. You know, I don't think that she's not walking around Dolly Parton. I think things look great. But that was her idea of what the implant is. And so I don't think they treated her rippling by going down in size. I think something, you know, whether it's changing the cohesiveness, changing the plane of the implant, more likely, you know, changing the cohesiveness, you know, I would say would be the first step. And then I don't know if they put in mesh or something else, but.
Yeah, it could have been, I mean, you know, in theory you could do fat grafting, but she probably doesn't have a lot of fat to transfer. So yeah, without, you know, it's, I think it's too hard to really speculate.
She said she's had no lipo, no body contouring, and no BBL. And she did not come across as someone who would have had a BBL. So that to me doesn't surprise me, but it just kind of goes with when I think the taboo of social media and plastic surgery, when you think about plastic surgery, that's one of the first procedures I think that comes to mind is, fuller butts. And I think that's, you know, the reason why we made our,
yeah, you know, they snap one photo of like a certain angle and it looks a little bigger than a different angle from a few years back. And people, you know, like to run with those things, which I think, you know, it's kind of, I feel like a lot of that stuff becomes clickbait, but, I think it's good to, yeah, that's where her just being very transparent and open, I think is really, you know, commendable of her for doing that.
I think it's great too, that she just talked about multiple breast augmentations. Again, I don't think we can talk about that too much, just because that's what we tell our patients, is that, you know, it's not just a one and done. Whether you breastfeed, whether you gain weight, lose weight over time, gravity starts to pull down, and sometimes they need to be retightened, readjusted. Sometimes you decide you want to change your implant size down the road. I've had a couple of patients this week alone who had implants in 2007, and we're going to end up taking those out and just doing a lift, because over the last 15 or so years, the weight has gained, the breasts have gotten larger, and the size is no longer desirable. Had another patient who just wants them swapped out, is happy with the clothing she's in, the bra she's in, and then had another pre-op who, you know, a change to just a mastopexy or just a breast lift, to actually just getting a small implant in just to fill out that upper pole fullness, just to give that volume that a lift doesn't do.
I took out 40-year-old implants this week.
Calcified or what, were they still?
Yeah, they're subglandular, calcified, contracted.
Total capsulectomy.
Total capsulectomy, mastopexy, fat grafting. It went great. She's like, the next day, she's like, I feel so much better just having that weight off. And they're in for 40 years. And especially when they're contracted, they often, you know, they don't feel right. Yeah, I mean, you know, that older gel type, you know, little stickier, but,
I had a,
have you used clindamycin wash to get rid of the silicone? You seen that?
I have not personally used that. Is that what you use?
It was just published in, like, I guess in March this month. It worked great. I saw it at a conference and I tried it, for whatever reason. It's not the Clinda antibiotic, but the molecule kind of helps get rid, you know, release the silicone.
Yeah. And, you know, just for our listeners, this is the older implants, 40-year-old implants, not the cohesive gel, the well-studied implants that we're using currently, but some of these older ones that were a lot of unknowns, where it's, you know, quite liquid. This can leak and get into the muscle, get into the capsule, and create a reaction, a calcification that can harden.
Yeah, and there wasn't really any spread outside the capsule, but, you know, just to make sure it was all cleared out.
I've actually had a couple of more recent implants that were done elsewhere and wanted to be changed in size, and you know, clinically on exam felt fine, no issues, no symptoms, and go in and one of them was ruptured and you can't even tell. And that's a common question that I get pre-op, is like, what happens if it ruptures? And I think with these new age implants, it's for gel, it's harder, because a lot of times you just can't tell. It's all contained within itself, and so you're kind of just waiting for symptoms or waiting for the expiration of 15 to 20 years and thinking about getting it done. At least, you know, that's the scenarios that I see.
What about saline? What happened to saline implants?
So, you know, saline implants, which were very popular years ago, it's been a couple of years since I've put in a saline implant, but the nice thing about those, I don't know if it's nice or not.
Maybe the only nice thing
is that they deflate, and then it's just saline or just sterile salt water, and then your body just reabsorbs that, but it deflates. And so a patient can wake up and then be as if they don't have a breast or it's deflated. Oftentimes they'll call on a panic, you know, need to be seen. It's not necessarily a medical emergency or urgency for that matter. It's not something you want to just sit around with, just because the pocket itself can start to scar down and you want to think about what you want to do with that. But there's increased rippling. It feels less natural. It has that boom or bust type of behavior, where it can be fine or it can just spontaneously deflate. And those are the, some of the ins and outs of saline implants.
Yeah. Yeah. Typically, we often talk about them, but most of the time I'm only using those if someone has them and liked them, which is most of my revisions. I'm taking out saline, putting in silicone. They always like them a lot better.
Yeah,
so
for sure.
Kind of reinforces that. What else, were there any other procedures? So yeah, no facelifts, no real body stuff.
She said that there was one procedure that she's not going to talk about, that she had one other one, but it's off. Did anything come to mind for you for that?
I mean, I think probably labiaplasty, right? I mean, that's what probably is a more sensitive topic that most people don't really want to talk about, but is becoming more and more popular, and all the data supports that over the last 10 to 15 years.
It's a very straightforward procedure. It can be done in the office, or it can be done in a procedure, or with some combined procedures that make sense to do that. But I would say it's a common issue, relatively technically appropriate to offer patients, and patients are some of the most satisfied that you have. They're very happy with that procedure. But again, this is all speculation. We are just trying to fill our podcast with interesting content.
That's probably one of the most common local procedures I perform in the office.
Everyone's just like local, because I say we just do it under local, and they're like, local, you got to be crazy, or the team that we talked about in the last episode, or local, what are you like, is this really? And then you do it under local and you're kind of just chit chatting. You're able to localize and numb the tissue up. There's no IV. They can drive themselves home, and you make sure that they're nice and comfortable, and it's a win-win, and you keep the costs down. You keep the anesthetic issues down, and the recovery is pretty quick.
Yeah. People are, it's a nervous procedure to have, I think, given the area, but oftentimes when they finish, that was way easier than I expected. And pretty quick recovery. And most people, it's one of those things to be like, why did I wait so long? I didn't know that this was an option.
So to me, it seems to be sort of an awkward conversation to bring up. Do you promote that? How does that walk into your office? Are they calling and asking?
They're calling in. I mean, I don't bring it up to patients that aren't coming in asking for it.
Mm-hmm. And then, there's just a couple other celebrities from Big Bang. Kaley Cuoco also is similar to Megan Fox, is that she's come out with her plastic surgeries, rhinoplasty, breast augmentation, said it was some of the best things that she's ever done, which is not necessarily meant to toot our horn, but just to make it clear that some of the celebrities that we look up to, that we adore, that we are putting on covers of magazines and on main stages, are patients who have undergone plastic surgery, and the more willingness that they are to open up about it, I think helps just social norms, so that there's less filters, less fake features, and it just becomes what is normal, what's appropriate, and what's not going to be achieved with other means.
I think that's spot on, and especially with Instagram being so popular, and filters, and all these kind of very staged photos and edited AI. It's hard to know what's real, what's not. And then you have Instagram not allowing plastic surgeons to actually show real results. Which is, frustrating in a lot of ways, because we're trying to be transparent and, have set realistic expectations. Having celebrities talk about what is real, what isn't.
To me, it's if a celebrity is asked how do you look so good? And they're just I get 8 hours of sleep a night. That's so bothersome to me as a plastic surgeon. It's as if you're walking down the red carpet and they're saying who are you? Aren't wearing what dress? And you're saying I made this dress myself. It's just give your plastic surgeon a shout out. Or, I have some local patients that, have done a great job of, promoting and doing their plastic surgery journey and posts. And I find that to be very helpful and inspiring, and also very informational for me. So I'm seeing what the patients are feeling after surgery and what they're going through and what the comments are. And so that's very helpful. But, at the end of the day, on the flip side of that, privacy is also very important, and patients are, and celebrities are able and more than, willing to, keep things to themselves. And I think that's important as well. My practice is very private. I have a smaller town, and so there's a lot of individuals who just want to keep things private, and that to me is of the utmost importance. At the end of the day, I think it's very helpful when celebrities can share, just so that it's clear that toxin filler is everywhere. And the lasting impression that I would make is, go watch one of the Seinfeld episodes from the 90s, when all of those characters, and all of those actors are in their late 20s, 30s. And then you compare a Megan Fox who's 37, and then you imagine her on Seinfeld's couch talking with Elaine and all of them. And whenever I go back to watch that series, which is one of my favorites, you just look at all the creases and the wrinkles, and you're just like, the lack of lips, and you're just like, oh wow, like that was a different time.
That was right now, right? Times change.
Yeah, we celebrate some of the actresses and actors who have grown, aged naturally, and I think there's something for everybody. It's to each their own, but we're here to talk and spill the beans about it, and I'm happy that Megan Fox can give us some insight on how she maintains her beauty.
Yeah. So I think we're shifting for the next one. Is that correct?
Totally different. We're just going to talk about hand stuff. It'll be awesome.
Oh, man. You're always, I'm always telling you about some of my woodworking projects and my power tools, and you get a little nervous. But I got the fancy saw, the saw stop.
Oh, saw stop is great. But otherwise, just go to the store and.
No, I like to build stuff. But yeah, we'll talk about hand surgery. You can tell me what to be careful of, and all that. Very common, just overuse injuries. And
we're gonna put me on the hot seat. You're just gonna ask me a bunch of questions, and we're just gonna get in the nitty gritty, and we're gonna make it fun.
Yeah, as always. All right, awesome. Well, until then, have a good rest of your day.
All right, man. Take care.
See ya. So you
wanna. Thanks so much for tuning into this week's episode of Fuller Butts, a behind-the-scenes plastic surgery podcast. Doctors Fuller and Butts are so appreciative of your time and attention. We invite you to subscribe, share, and continue to enjoy our plastic surgery perspective. Feel free to reach out on Instagram at either SFullerSurgeryMD or at DanielButtsMD. That's Butts with a Z for comments, suggestions, and support. Remember, be artsy, stay scientific, and make life fun. We hope you'll join us again on the next episode of Fuller Butts.